guys, and welcome to episode 123 of the OCDstories.com podcast. Now, this episode is going to be about medication. So I asked you guys through Instagram and Twitter and Facebook, I believe, a little while ago now, your questions, if I were to get a psychiatrist on to talk about medication, what would they be? And I got, I think, something like 50 questions. Some of them duplicated one another. Some I obviously couldn't ask because they were about dosages, and that's a very personal thing and a conversation that should be had with your own psychiatrist or medical doctor. But Dr. David Sherman kindly agreed to come on to answer your questions. Now, before we get into it, I do want to do a disclaimer. This podcast is not medical advice. And although Dr. David Sherman is a psychiatrist and trained medical doctor, advice around medication should come from your own psychiatrist and own medical doctor. So this podcast was merely just to educate slightly, give you some information that, so when you're in that doctor's room, the psychiatrist's room, you can have a more informed discussion. And a lot of the stuff that David shares is from research. So please just see this episode as information and entertainment. And please speak to a trained medical professional about medication, if it's right for you, if you're on it, if you want to come off it, or if you're having side effects. That those types of conversations should be have with your own medical professional. So disclaimer aside, it was very great to get Dr. David Sherman on. I think he had a very unbiased approach to medication, a very scientific one. He talks off research, and it was interesting to hear him ask your questions. Our conversation wasn't as conversational as it usually is on the podcast because this topic is about medication and I'm not a trained medical professional. I wanted to ask the questions you'd ask without putting my own opinion in too much. So I sit back quite a lot on this. I let David do a lot of the talking, and I was really fascinated by his answers. So without further ado, here is David. On the podcast today, I have Dr. David Sherman, who has kindly agreed to come on the show to answer your questions around medication. Welcome to the show, David.
Thank you.
I'm glad
to be here.
Thank you. It's good to have you on, and it's been a challenge getting someone on to talk about medication. So I appreciate you coming on to answer, because when I put out to the listeners to get their questions, there were so many questions that came back. And we're going to try and do most of them here. We've had to remove some because they were too specific. So I appreciate your time. But it would be good to find out a bit more about yourself, your profession, and what you do.
Sure. So again, my name is Dr. David Sherman, and I'm a psychiatrist practicing in New York City for about 15 years now. And for much of that time, I've also been an assistant professor of psychiatry at Columbia University Medical Center. And I would call myself a psychiatry generalist, but over the years, I've developed a particular expertise in treating people with OCD. It was part of my training at Columbia. I trained at Columbia as well as teaching there afterwards. And now it's become a big part of my practice. I know that today we're going to talk mostly about medication, but yeah. I want to say at the outset that while medication can play an important role in OCD and sometimes even a life-saving role, it's really psychotherapy, specifically CBT, that really should be considered the heart of treatment. And so while we're talking about medication, I always want to not forget that important point.
Yeah. Thank you for clarifying that point. I think it's an important one. Okay. And thank you for introducing yourself. So it's worth saying every question I'm going to ask you today is from the listeners. So the first one is, what are the most common medications prescribed and some of the side effects?
Yeah. So by far, the answer is a family of medications called selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors, which is a mouthful.
Yeah.
So for short, those are called SSRIs. And they've really become the most commonly prescribed medication for OCD for two reasons. The first is because they are at least as effective as any other medication that we have today. And the second is that they have a relatively benign set of side effects. And I know that we're going to talk about side effects later.
Yeah.
And they certainly do have side effects, but they're relatively benign compared to some of the other options that we have. And so this family of medications, I'll just list what they are. They're ones probably that many people have heard of. There's fluoxetine, which was the very first SSRI, at least in the States, it was the first. There's fluvoxamine, which is also called Luvox. There's sertraline, which is in this country, in the States, called Zoloft. There's paroxetine, which seems to be common in the UK for some reason, and maybe a little bit less common here. There's citalopram, and there's escitalopram, and there's maybe two or three newer ones as well. And interestingly, within this family of several medications, none is felt to be better than another. There have been some studies comparing some of these medications head to head, and at least as far as the studies could resolve, there wasn't one that seemed to be any more effective than another, at least across a population, which, you know, studies include usually hundreds of people, and at least across large groups of people, one wasn't any better than the next one. And about 50% of people who are treated with one of these medications have some response, some benefit to the medication. And when there is a response, it's definitely not a cure. It's what we would call an amelioration or an improvement. So not a resolution of symptoms. And really the improvement on, I think by the sound of it, is modest. It's usually 20 to 40% symptom reduction, which is modest, but for an individual, it can maybe make a difference between being able to do certain things in life and possibly also engage in psychotherapy in a more effective way.
Yeah. No, thank you. That's a really good breakdown. That leads on to the next question, which is, how do SSRIs work for OCD?
Okay. So I dread this question when a patient asks, and that's because we really don't know for sure.
Yeah.
And I think I find that a little disconcerting, and I think patients find it very disconcerting, but it's mostly true. That said, we do know that SSRIs boost a certain brain chemical called serotonin. And there is evidence that in OCD, there are certain parts of the brain where serotonin seems to be underactive, or where there isn't enough serotonin. And when people are effectively treated for OCD, we see that these areas of the brain actually, the activity, the serotonin activity in these areas normalizes to a large extent. But I don't think we can say that we fully understand how these medications work.
Yeah. Okay. No, thank you. And the next question is around depression. So the listeners asked, I've heard depression is a deciding factor on whether or not to start medication. What other reasons are there to start medication?
Yeah, so that's a really important question. I think it's a question that There, people approach differently. Psychiatrists approach it differently depending on their eagerness to prescribe. And I think patients might approach it differently depending on their comfort in taking medication. And I think there are a few things that I think about. And I would say they're kind of on the face, obvious, I think, but worth listing. Mm. The first one is the first one is simply symptom severity.
How much is
an individual's symptoms really affecting their quality of life, their kind of day-to-day experience of life, as well as how much are the symptoms interfering with their functioning? Are they able to work effectively? Are they able to sustain, to have relationships, to have, you know, a family life that's not overly encumbered by symptoms? And when OCD is severe, it can obviously affect all of these areas of life in a very dramatic way.
Yeah.
So those are the things that I look for. And another thing is that I think, as I said earlier, it's almost always helpful and important for someone to be in behavioral therapy for OCD. And but sometimes symptoms are so severe that they can't really engage in behavioral therapy. Mm. So if medication makes the difference and allows someone to be able to do the therapy, which is often really difficult work, exposure therapy and response prevention, then, you know, that would be a really useful and important aspect of the treatment. And then the question asked about depression, I think that's also a reason to consider medication. If someone not only is struggling with OCD, but has pretty significant depression, that would be a good reason to consider medication. Fortunately, the same medications that we use to treat OCD are often treatments for depression. So in a way, you can kill two birds with one stone in those cases.
Okay, excellent. No, thank you. That's a really good breakdown. So the next question, I think this is a common one for a lot of people, is around tackling fears around medicine. And I think what goes along with fears is the stigma that can be attached to it. So a few of the fears listed here are the fear of side effects, the fear of dependence, fears that the medication will lose effectiveness and they have to switch to a different one.
Yeah, you know, I think that that's where a lot of us psychiatrists kind of fall down on the job, is really taking the time to address all of these fears in a very open, uninvested, non-judgmental way. Because I think that that's probably the biggest barrier to allowing medications to actually be helpful in someone's life. And so I think as important as what gets prescribed, it's how it gets prescribed. Mm. And I think we always need to make sure to leave plenty of time, in our consultations to discuss medication, what to expect and when, and to discuss, the potential side effects, to discuss what to expect when someone wants to come off these medications, which we'll talk about further. A little bit later.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, often patients take a few visits before they feel comfortable filling a prescription. And I think we should really respect that. And I think it makes sense that, you know, taking medication is a big decision. So I think there's value in simply having a consult, you know, about medication, feeling like you're being listened to, getting your questions answered, and really feeling like you've made your own decision around whether or not to take medication. And then addressing specific concerns that are so common for people. So I think there's the fear of side effects, which we'll talk about the different potential side effects. I think that's, you know, a big thing to address. And fortunately, the side effects are reversible. So, you know, I always make sure to tell a patient if they do end up trying a medication and they find that the side effects are not worth the benefit, that they can always stop, that they, you know, always have the power to make that decision. Another issue is that I find very common is people fear the loss of control, that, you know, they're taking a medication that affects their brain, and there's a fear that, you know, that they'll lose some part of themselves, and that they might not know who they are or really recognize themselves.
Yeah.
And I think these medications, while they are powerful and significant, they generally don't change personality, which, you know, some people fear that their personality would be changed. So I try to reassure them about that. And I think in some cases it's helpful to point out how their OCD really kind of results in some loss of control, loss of freedom, and that while medication might feel like a different type of loss, that it's really weighing the pros and cons in that sense. And then as far as addiction, I think maybe we'll talk about that a little bit more when we talk about stopping medication.
Yeah.
But these medications, SSRIs and some of the other medications that we'll come to later, are not addictive in the sense that people don't develop a physiological need for them. They don't develop a dependence on them. And yet, sometimes they can be hard to stop. And I think it's important to talk about that. But it would be different than being addicted to certain other recreational drugs that where there's a true physiological dependence that develops.
Okay, cool. Yeah, thank you. That's really good. I know it's what I've heard a lot in the community is kind of the worry around taking them. So I think that was a good breakdown. Okay, so next listener question is, have you ever had someone where the SSRI does not build up in their system like it should? What would you do about it? And then they put kind of raise the dose, switch meds, add meds, etc.
Yeah, so these medications, pretty much all of them are metabolized by the liver. And the liver is more than strong enough to metabolize all these medications. It doesn't pose any danger to the liver. But everybody's liver is different. And each one of these medications is metabolized in a slightly different way by different sets of enzymes. And because our genetics, because we are all different in our genetics, some people metabolize a certain medication more slowly. And sometimes there are people who metabolize medications very quickly. And so dosing can be tricky, and there's a wide range of dosing that might be appropriate for any individual for a given medication. So if someone doesn't seem to be responding at all to a medication, it is possible that they're just very quickly metabolizing the medicine. So sometimes it's worth increasing the dose to see if they start to get benefit at higher doses. And vice versa, some people metabolize medications or a specific medication very slowly, and so they might be sensitive to a very low dose. So it's definitely not one size fits all. And so we can determine that clinically by trying different doses, but when it seems like we're not able to figure out what truly is going on, it's also possible to measure blood levels of a certain medication. For instance, you can order a blood level of sertraline or of fluoxetine. It's not routinely done because it's expensive and a little bit esoteric, but it is possible to do that as well.
Okay. Yeah, no, thank you for that. I suppose you don't need to routinely take blood because there's no direct potential damage being done to the body, like, for example, something like lithium.
That's right. Yeah, with SSRIs, usually there is no blood work required. I would say a minority of psychiatrists do maybe check blood work once a year. But I would say that's, not everybody feels that that's necessary. That said, if there's a question of something medical going on that might be contributing, you know, to the seemingly psychiatric symptoms, then it would obviously be important to get blood work or possibly get a consultation with an internist or a primary care doctor.
Okay, cool. So you mentioned it a few times already, but the next question was around side effects. So just kind of what are some of the common ones that you see with your clients?
Yeah, so the first point I'd like to make is that in the first days of taking a medication, I would say even up to maybe 4 weeks, it's really critical to really stay in touch with a patient to make sure that they're tolerating it okay, because a lot of there are a lot of potential side effects when the body is first getting used to the medications, and these often go away. But it's important for a patient to know what to expect, because I've actually had meetings with countless patients who have tried medications in the past, but they really weren't educated as to what to expect when they're first starting. You know, I usually tell patients that when they're first starting, they could actually feel more anxious in the first few days, or it's not uncommon to feel tired or conversely to have trouble sleeping. And if you aren't prepared for that, you might feel like the medication is bad, that you're on the wrong track. And so I find that probably one of the most important parts of successful treatment is just preparing a patient for what to expect. And then if they do have some of these initial side effects, to just really, if they're mild, to support them and normalize that experience, so that they can get through the first few weeks. And as I said, these usually resolve in those first few weeks. And then to get to the point where they can start to hopefully experience some benefit from the medication. So those are short-term side effects, like more anxiety, tiredness, trouble sleeping. But there are also long-term side effects, which are definitely real. And I would say I usually make sure to talk about four different areas of side effects. The first one would be some form of sleep disturbance. And that could be feeling like you're sleeping just not as deeply, that maybe you require an hour more of sleep to feel rested. And that's a real thing, because sometimes these medications do decrease the amount of deep sleep that people are getting. So they might need a little bit more sleep. And then there's also a possibility of having vivid dreams, which for, I would say, a minority of people, they can be kind of disturbing because they can feel very lifelike sometimes. So that's the area of sleep. And then there's the area of weight gain, which people are often very concerned about. And I would say that maybe one in three people who take SSRIs will have some weight gain. And it's usually quoted as maybe 2 to 5% of body weight, which doesn't sound like a lot, but most people, that's a big deal for most people. And I also take it seriously because, being, gaining weight is not good for your health and it doesn't make you feel good for most people. So, and there are certain ways of working with that, which maybe we can, we can talk about later. But that's not uncommon. And then once in a while, I see people gain more significant amounts of weight, but that I would say that that's quite rare. And then the third area of side effects are sexual side effects, which are also can also be troublesome for some people. And again, I would say maybe one in three women really kind of struggle with certain sexual side effects, and maybe less men. Maybe, one in five men might also struggle with some of the sexual side effects. And those can be a loss of libido. In other words, just a somewhat decreased interest in sex. And then also the possibility of delayed orgasm. And then once in a while, just for, more so for women, just a difficulty or an inability to have an orgasm, which is, that's a serious side effect because it can really affect quality of life and relationships, obviously. And then the fourth common side effect, I would say, would be some level of feeling an emotional numbing. And again, it's important to remember with all of these that a lot of people have none of these side effects. So I don't want to, scare people too much, but I would say it's not uncommon. Maybe, 25% of people have some feeling like they don't experience emotion quite as strongly. And it can sometimes be uncomfortable that they feel like they're not fully, not as fully kind of experiencing emotion in their lives. So, so those are the common ones. And there are others that are possible, but I think those are the ones that usually come up, if side effects are an issue for an individual.
Thank you for breaking it down to categories as well. So the next question ties perfectly into this, which is there a way of mitigating the side effects?
For those early side effects that come up when you're first starting medication, the best thing is often to just wait it out if they're not too uncomfortable. That often those do get better or resolve completely. If they're more severe, obviously, and this has happened sometimes, I decide it's just worth stopping and maybe trying something else. For longer term side effects, I would say if they are nuisances but are tolerable, probably the first strategy would be to just try and lower the dose a little bit. And hopefully there's a sweet spot where there's, still a still a good benefit from the medication, but the side effects, become less of an issue. And then a third possibility would be to, for specific types of side effects, sometimes to introduce another medication. And I would say most patients are loath to do this. It's hard to get onto, it's hard to sometimes, feel like you have to take one medication, but to take a second one to deal with side effects is sometimes not, that not a patient's favorite thing to do, but, sometimes that strategy can really help. And if someone is really benefiting from a medication, it can help them stay on a medication.
Okay.
And then I guess if all else fails, there's always switching a medication. If a medication is really helping, then switching is kind of a, I would say, a last resort,
Okay.
unless it's really necessary.
Yeah, so almost try and manage the side effects first, and then yeah, switch as a last resort. Okay, cool. I guess you loosely answered this at the start, but the next question is, why does medication not work for everyone?
I would say that medication, there is a medication out there that would work for probably the majority, maybe even the vast majority of people, work to some extent. I think, for some people, it's a long process. Hopefully, if someone is trying medication, they'll be lucky and the first medication will be helpful to them, provide significant benefit. Sometimes it's the second or the third medication, and sometimes it's a combination of medications that do the trick. I would say, for people who've been on medication and it hasn't helped for them and they're really suffering, I would really encourage them not to give up, to really, in addition, obviously, to psychotherapy, to finding someone that they feel they can work with to maybe try something different or try something novel. It's not uncommon for the third or fourth medication to be the one that really works. It's important not to give up.
Good advice. Good words of hope. Okay, so next question is, do you build up resistance to certain SSRIs over time? And therefore, is it a good idea to try a new medication from time to time?
This is an area of a lot of controversy, I would say, in psychiatry, with the majority of my colleagues seem to not kind of believe that there's such a thing as building a resistance to SSRI specifically. I would say I don't know. I think that medications, do sometimes stop working. Whether we call that building, that someone built a resistance, or whether there's a new stressor, a new stressor in someone's life, or something else going on. Maybe it's that someone is also it has become depressed. It's not clear, but sometimes it is important to switch. If a medication doesn't seem to be helping, it's important to switch. Or if a medication is helping but maybe isn't helping as much, then sometimes it can be helpful to consider an augmentation, taking a second medication in addition to the one that they're taking. I would say it's never a good idea to switch if a medication is continuing to be helpful. In other words, it's really not necessary or recommended to switch a medication preemptively just because you're anticipating that it'll stop working.
Good answer. So the next one is, why did I put on so much weight when on medication?
I quoted the number that maybe 1 in 3 people gain 2 to 5% of body weight. And that can feel like a lot of weight. And then I've had maybe 2 or 3 patients who've gained considerably more than that for whatever reason. And I don't think we truly understand why, for instance, why SSRIs cause weight gain, whether it's a change in metabolism or an increase in appetite, or maybe it's different for different people. I think it's important to put it out there as a possibility when someone is first starting medication that they might have some weight gain. So at least they have the opportunity to maybe make some behavioral changes in their life, to hopefully counterbalance that.
Yeah.
But if an individual does gain weight, and it's important for them to try and work on reversing that, then I sometimes recommend working with a nutritionist or even with a clinic-based weight management program to help address that. And obviously, these are for people who are getting a lot of benefit from the medication and want to stay on the medication, yet are unhappy because of the weight gain.
Yeah. Okay. So, good answer. The next one is around pregnancies. So they want to know if there's any medications they should avoid if wanting to get pregnant.
Yeah. So this is a big question in, I would say, in medicine in general, including in psychiatry and including in, in OCD treatment. And it's also, in psychiatry, it's very individual. For instance, I would say, if someone is thinking about getting pregnant, and it's always a good idea to think, think this through before you get pregnant, it's important to really have a discussion with your psychiatrist about the pros and cons of staying on a medication, versus stopping. And I think, usually there are pros and cons on both sides of that question, but it's different for different people. That said, I want to also say that it's a question that that women often really struggle with, feeling guilty if they do. If they are thinking about staying on a medication during pregnancy. And so it's an area where patients generally need a lot of reassurance and support, around whatever decision they make. And so on one end of the spectrum, I would say there are definitely people who clearly, it's worth trying to come off the medication before they get pregnant, their symptoms are mild, that they are doing well in behavioral therapy, and that, it's a good time to try and stop the medication. And then on the other end of the spectrum, there are people who have symptoms that are so severe that do come back when they're not taking medication, or that have other mental illness, such as severe depression, that has been recurrent throughout their life, where it often does make sense for them, but also for their fetus and the baby that is coming to stay on the medication. Fortunately, the SSRIs have a reasonable safety record around pregnancy, and it's not to say that there are no risks. There are. Which, we could get into, but the risks are, reasonably, sometimes, worth the alternative, which, where there is risks as well, there's a lot of risk, in having severe anxiety or severe depression during pregnancy, and also postpartum. Among the SSRIs, if someone does choose to stay on medication, we have the best data on fluoxetine and sertraline, and also possibly citalopram. And so those we feel most comfortable if someone is to stay on medication, that they be one of those medications. The only SSRI that should be flat out avoided is paroxetine. And that's because it's really the only the only SRI that has been demonstrated to have birth defects as a risk. I mean, it's a small risk, but it's a risk. Whereas with the other SSRIs, the other older ones, I'm not talking about the ones that have been introduced in the last few years, which we have very little data on, but the older ones don't appear to have any risk for birth defects. So sometimes it does make sense for a woman to stay on a medication during pregnancy. And also postpartum, including during breastfeeding.
Okay. No, thank you. That was
so it's actually a very complicated area. Yeah. And as I said, that's an area that's really important to speak to a psychiatrist, and sometimes even a psychiatrist who specializes in pregnancy. In this country, they're called reproductive psychiatrists. It's kind of a new subspecialty that has developed.
Okay, excellent. I didn't even know that they existed. That's fascinating.
Yeah.
Maybe they want to work on the title though. Okay, so the next question is, what are the long-term effects of taking medication on the brain and the chemical balance once you stop them?
Yeah, so this is a really good question. And it's, first of all, I think it's a challenging question because there are no clear guidelines, especially like in the world of OCD, as to how long someone should stay on these medications. In depression, we do have more clear guidelines. For instance, if someone has had one episode of depression and hasn't had recurrent depression, there's a guideline that suggests that it's worth staying on a medication for a year and then probably to try and stop after that. Whereas for recurrent serious depression, that the recommendation is to stay on it long-term, if not indefinitely. But for OCD and also some of the anxiety disorders, there really is no consensus. Like I've seen anything from 1 to 2 years to indefinitely. And I think part of why we don't have guidelines is we don't have reliable information. I'm not a researcher, but if I were a researcher, I think this is what I'd want to study. Mm. I think there's a reason why it doesn't get studied, or maybe several reasons why it doesn't get studied. Number one, the private sector doesn't want to fund these studies because they don't want to find out what the long-term effects are, I think, or because it's expensive to run studies that last 20 or 30 years. And so it's really, I think, an important role for government to do these studies. And I think another issue is that there's an ethical issue in doing the studies because it would involve like a truly rigorous study of this question of how long to stay on medication would involve dividing randomly people who are really, really suffering with mental illness into two groups, one that's getting treatment and one that isn't.
Yeah.
And then following them. So it's a really challenging area to get information about. So what do we know? So as far as the long-term effects of taking medication on the brain, I would say we know nothing. there have been many hypotheses and many theories, but they're really, I think, all over the map.
Yeah.
Some of the hypotheses are that it's actually helpful to stay on medication long-term for someone with severe depression or severe anxiety, because in a way it protects the brain from the damages that happen if someone has high levels of depression or anxiety. But there are others who feel that that it might interfere with the brain's natural ability to heal itself. So we don't really know. As far as any physical risk in taking medications such as SSRIs long term, and I realize I've mostly been speaking about SSRIs. We know that if someone is on an SSRI for decades, they have a slightly increased risk for osteoporosis, which is the weakening of the bones, which usually happens toward, you know, the latter part of life. And we also know that there is some increased risk for bleeding. Mm-hmm. And I would say it's a very slight increase, but if someone is having to take an SSRI but also having to take other medications that also might put them at risk for bleeding, that, you know, that can be a factor. But really, those are the only things that we know for sure about long-term use of the medication.
Okay. No, thank you. And thank you for being so honest. I guess the mind, without sounding cliche, is kind of like space. There's so many, isn't there? There's way more neurons in the brain than there are stars in the various galaxies or something. So for us to try and figure it all out in this lifetime is a big leap.
Yeah. And I think we're just at the beginning of trying to understand everything about the brain, and I don't know that we'll ever truly understand everything, because it makes sense that we can only understand so much given how complex the brain is.
Yeah It's both fascinating and frustrating in equal measure. The next question is, how long should you be symptom-free before trying to reduce meds?
So I would say, I mentioned this before, unfortunately, we don't have clear guidelines with OCD. Mm. But I would say that it probably makes sense to stay on medication for a minimum of a year before trying to reduce meds. And I would say that during that year and continuing beyond that year, being in behavioral therapy would be, you know, would really be important and helpful.
Yeah. Okay, excellent. So I was going to say, the other thing I would add to that as well is, I know some people want to get rid of all intrusive thoughts, but the truth is that there was that study that came out that was like 95% of the population have intrusive thoughts. It's just someone with OCD, the thoughts stick around longer, and because there's anxiety there, it becomes more negatively meaningful. So I guess, just to clarify that for anyone listening, sometimes symptom-free could just be you're not doing compulsions and anxiety is less, but you may never get rid of the thoughts.
I'm glad that you're pointing this out. And yeah, I think I would have actually answered the question differently, that in the world of OCD, people do not become symptom free, that or maybe very rarely so. Mm. That what we hope for is just not that those intrusive thoughts go away, but that they don't bother us as much.
Yeah.
And they just kind of fade into the background, that we notice them for what they are, but we carry on in our lives and we don't let them, you know, change our experience of the world or the decisions we make. In OCD, I mentioned that 1 year, like that it's probably important to stay on the medications for at least 1 year. But even at the 1 year mark, I think it's important to expect that you will still have some symptoms, but hopefully they would be significantly more manageable and that you will have been able to address them in different ways. And that hopefully when medication is stopped, that one would continue to be able to work on the intrusive thoughts through behavioral therapy, or at least through the skills that one learns, one has already learned in behavioral therapy.
Yeah, yeah, really good point. Okay, so the next question is very similar, which is, it'd be useful to know how to reduce or come off medication and advising when choosing to do this. And is the answer to this kind of probably best to speak to your psychiatrist because it's a personal decision, or is there anything that's worth them knowing?
Yeah, so for some reason in psychiatry, people often come off the medications on their own. They either read about how to do it on the internet or they just wing it. And I think it's something unique to psychiatry. You don't often hear about that when it comes to diabetes medication or blood pressure medication. And I don't know what that says about psychiatry or psychiatrists or the experience of getting treatment for mental health. But it is really helpful to work with a psychiatrist when coming off medication whenever possible, because it can be a process. And if one stops cold turkey, most people, I would say, get some measure of withdrawal, which can be quite uncomfortable. It's quite uncomfortable, and I think it can be, for the most part, avoided as well. So when I work with a patient to come off medication, I usually do it very slowly, usually maybe reducing a dose by even as little as 25% a month. But everybody's different. Like some people actually can stop cold turkey and they feel pretty much okay, but some people are exquisitely sensitive to any medication drops. And I would say the most challenging drop is going from is the very end, like going from the tiniest dose to nothing can, you know, sometimes really be uncomfortable. And not only is it important to reduce slowly, but there are also a couple of tricks that can sometimes help to manage the withdrawal. And while the withdrawal is usually time limited, it can sometimes be quite uncomfortable.
Yeah. Yeah. No, thank you for clarifying. And this is kind of my question as a follow up is that the way you said the last 25% to going to zero medication can be sometimes the hardest. Do you feel that that's potentially because the placebo or the idea of the brain's now going, now I've got nothing? So when a thought does come, you start to worry that you're not on any medication, and that just naturally makes the thoughts worse.
I do think that that's possible. I think there's the opposite of a placebo effect. It's called a nocebo effect when someone is stopping medication. But I do know also that the withdrawal is also a real physiological phenomenon, and I think that's been studied. That's been studied in the laboratory as well. That it's a real thing, but it could be a combination of both for sure.
Yeah, cool. No, that was just my curiosity getting the better of me. So, the first part you've already answered, which is what to know about long-term use of SSRIs. We've discussed that. But the second part of the question was, is it okay to take them forever?
I wish I knew the answer to that. You know, I think I do know that some people seem to just do better taking SSRIs forever. You know, I wouldn't say that's definitely not true for everybody, but some people do better just taking this medication indefinitely. That, you know, it gives them significant benefit, and, you know, when they're off of the medication, beyond the kind of the time limited withdrawal period, they just seem to really struggle. I would say that it's probably worth trying to get off medication at a certain point, but, you know, if medication really does help long term without any negative side effects, that yeah, sometimes it might be a reasonable choice.
Yeah. Okay, cool. You're gonna have to help me with the pronunciation here, but the next question is please talk about the benefits of clomipramine.
Good. Yeah.
Yeah. Is that right?
Uh-huh. Okay. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, clomipramine.
Okay. There you
go. Yeah. So we've talked about SSRIs for the most part. So there's a medication that's actually been around for longer than the SSRIs called clomipramine, which is I actually don't know how long it's been around because it's been around longer than I've been practicing, but it's an older antidepressant of the tricyclic family of antidepressants. And it was really, I believe, the first medication treatment for OCD that we had. And it's been found to be as good as SSRIs. It's been studied it's been studied head to head with SSRIs and found to have a similar response rate. It's not the first choice, or maybe even not the second choice. And that's not because it's not effective, but because it tends to have significantly greater side effects than SSRIs. So usually if I see someone who is seeking medication treatment for OCD, I usually start with an SSRI. And if there's no benefit from the first SSRI, I usually even try a second and sometimes a third SSRI before we start talking about clomipramine. I'm glad that clomipramine exists because it is different from the SSRIs. I mean, occasionally people don't tolerate SSRIs, and this is a good alternative. And occasionally, for whatever reason, people just don't respond as well to SSRIs as they do to clomipramine. So that's clomipramine. I don't prescribe it very often, but I'm glad that it's there.
Yeah, absolutely. Useful to have as an alternative. Okay, so next question is kind of a two-part, which is what are the promising OCD medication research areas, and will there be any medication breakthrough in the next 5 to 10 years?
I certainly hope so. SSRIs have been around for, I guess, now over 30 years, and they're still kind of what we go to treat OCD. It's about time that we have something new. And I would say we do have newer medications that we use, not in place of SSRIs, but as add-ons to SSRIs. So if someone has some level of response to SSRIs but are still really symptomatic and really not functioning well, then we might add something. And common additions to SSRIs are many, including, you know, for very severe cases, sometimes antipsychotics. But there's a new type of medication that we are increasingly trying, which are medications that modulate a neurotransmitter called glutamate. So SSRIs increase serotonin in the brain. And then there's this other class of medications that that decrease glutamate or change in some way the way glutamate is working in the brain. And so this, I would say, is probably the most active area of medication research in OCD. There are certain medications that already exist and that are used in other areas of medicine that modulate glutamate that that seem to hold some promise for OCD. And just to give a few examples, for instance, there is an Alzheimer's disease medication called memantine, which is a glutamate blocker. It blocks glutamate receptors, and it has shown some benefit for OCD. Again, I think it's only been studied as an addition to an SSRI, not by itself. I might be wrong about that. And then there's also riluzole, which is also a glutamate, what's called a glutamate antagonist, and yeah, that's used in ALS. There's lamotrigine, which is used in bipolar depression, which is sometimes now being added to an SSRI. And then there's a medication called N-acetylcysteine, or NAC, which has become very kind of very popular as a possible add-on to help with OCD. Now, do any of these, are any of these medications a cure? It's not looking like it to me, but, you know, if they could help if they could help a little bit, that would be better than nothing.
Yeah.
And hopefully there's something entirely new that hasn't been identified yet that will, you know, have more of an impact in this area. But there is definitely a need for some new treatment options in OCD.
Yeah, agreed. Okay, no, thank you for going there. I didn't realize there was a lot of those areas, so that was interesting. So kind of last question then is there anything else that you'd like to add that I haven't asked you or you think's worth sharing?
No, I think we've really, the questions that were asked by your audience have been really the questions that I hear from my patients, and I think they've been really good, relevant questions. And I would just want to repeat things that I've already said, which is that medications play a small supportive role, but sometimes, you know, a critical role in treatment of OCD. And that whenever possible, finding a therapist who really knows how to treat OCD, who understands OCD and does behavioral therapy and can really engage your audience or whoever needs it in exposure response prevention, that's really, really key. And that if medication can help that process, then that's really also important. And to if you've had a bad experience with medication once or twice, to not give up and to find someone who you can work with who will hopefully be able to find something that would be more helpful in the future.
Brilliant. Yeah, good way to end. I'd really like to thank you for your time, David, on behalf of all the listeners.
Oh, my pleasure.
Yeah, it's really, really good to have you on and cover this important topic, because I've done over 120 episodes now and not really touched on medication for for various reasons. You know, I'm not trained. I'm not a psychiatrist. It's not my place to talk about it. So I appreciate you coming on to discuss it.
Oh, sure. I enjoyed it. And I would be happy to come on a second time at any point.
Absolutely. So there you have it. I hope you enjoyed my conversation with David. And as I said at the start, disclaimer time, this podcast is not treatment. I am not a medical professional. All the information on this podcast should be seen as just information and entertainment to help you maybe have a more informed discussion with your psychiatrist. Any steps to do with medication, please seek the treatment of a trained professional and they will be able to speak to you as an individual and advise you appropriately. So until next time, take care.